Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, March 3rd, 2015, and I'm your host, Ariel Taylor, with my co-hosts, Lavendar and Anastasia. We are still looking for a few more members of the Crystal Soul Group for our next Starseed Crystal Quest in Arkansas, which is May 10 through the 16th, ending with Pleiadian lineup. This group is identified by having at least one of these six astrological star markings, either 25, 26, or 27 degrees, of one or more of these six signs: Capricorn, Cancer, Aquarius, Leo, Taurus, or Scorpio. If you feel the call of the crystals but aren't sure if you have the required markings, just send an email to crystals@starseedhotline.com with your birth info, date, time, place, and your current location, and I'll be happy to take a quick look at your charts to see if you're part of this soul family and send you more details if you are, because we only have a handful of spots left. Our very distinguished guest this evening is Carl Johann Kallmann, who started his scientific career with a PhD in physical biology from Stockholm University in Sweden. His papers on environmental science, toxicology, and cancer research have been widely quoted, and he has lectured at MIT, Cornell, the Chinese Academy of Preventive Medicine, and the World Health Organization. But since 1994, he has devoted his work to understanding the Mayan calendar, seeing it as a map of the evolution of human consciousness. His latest work is the first volume of a paradigm shift trilogy entitled The Global Mind and the Rise of Civilization, where he presents his novel theory concerning the metaphysical implications connected with the Mayan calendar. His website is Kallmann.com, and that's Kallmann.com. At the top of the show, it's the Starseed News with Anastasia, bringing topics of interest to starseeds that you won't hear in the mainstream media. And we'd like to thank Vanya for hosting the switchboard this evening. We have an online starseed community at starseedhotline.ning.com, and thanks go to Tammy, as always, for her dedication to the forum. You can download our show podcasts on iTunes or right from our Blog Talk Radio episode page. Just look for the cloud with an arrow on it icon. The toll-free number for StarseedHotline.com is 888-881-0881. The Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings and your natal astrological chart. And the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one phone session available with Lavendar, Anastasia, or myself. Remote healing sessions for people and pets are also available with Tammy. If you have a birthday coming up, don't miss out on your 10 hours of power. Find out when it happens by requesting your solar return timing. And if you are going to have a Stage 2 session to interpret your solar return energies, please make sure you give yourself about 2 months ahead to make sure that you get an appointment. Lavendar will handle those. So first tonight, I would like to introduce Anastasia. Good evening, Anastasia.
Good evening, Ariel and Starseed listeners. Lavendar, it's going to be a wonderful program this evening. I'm looking forward to it. And the week has gone by quickly, as they always do, but we are yet facing another winter storm across the United States. I'm kind of hoping this will be the last, but Mother Nature has her own mind about things. I don't know about the rest of you, but the robins have shown up here, as well as songbirds, and the chipmunks are out. So I think we are experiencing a meteorological spring, even if it's not an astronomical spring, because nature is waking up, and that's just so wonderful, wonderful. Well, we have a subsiding chance of solar storms. Earth is exiting a stream of solar wind that sparked bright auroras around the Arctic Circle on the March 1st and 2nd. Now, NOAA forecasters estimate a 55% chance of geomagnetic storms today that will be subsiding. Now, departing sunspot AR2290 is crackling with M-class solar flares, the strongest so far, an M8 class explosion today that almost crossed the threshold into an X class territory. In fact, the Solar Dynamics Observatory recorded the extreme ultraviolet flash, which was just a pulse of radiation from the flare that ionized the upper layers of our atmosphere and created a blackout of radio transmissions at frequencies below 10 megahertz. They say the effect was particularly strong over Australia and parts of the South Pacific. Well, in Egypt, they have uncovered a 3,000-year-old tomb in Luxor. Now, Egypt's Ministry of Antiquities says that American archaeologists have discovered a 3,000-year-old tomb with beautifully painted walls belonging to a nobleman who guarded the temple of the ancient deity Amun. Now, Tuesday's statement says the tomb, found near the southern city of Luxor, dates back to the New Kingdom of the 18th dynasty, the most famous of ancient Egypt dynasties. Now, the nobleman's name was Amenhotep. The Minister of Antiquities says the tomb contains stunning scenes with bright colors painted on the walls. He says the scenes depict the tomb owner and his wife in front of an offering table, as well as scenes of daily life, such as hunting and so on. The ministry says the tomb was discovered by the American Research Center's team. It gave no date for the time that tomb was discovered. Don't know when they discovered it. They're just now releasing the news about it. Sounds absolutely fascinating. Wouldn't it be fun to be the first person on the scene, going into those areas that haven't been entered by humankind for thousands of years? Wow, the energy would be so powerful.
Absolutely.
And yes, and speaking of lost tombs, we have a lost city that's been discovered in Honduras. A team of archaeologists has reportedly discovered a lost city deep within the remote jungles of Honduras. Now, this is a lost city that's never been explored, and it was founded by a culture that archaeologists know almost nothing about. Now, this was first reported in the National Geographic yesterday, and an archaeologist from Colorado State University and his colleagues went to this site because they said that it was based, they went to see it because it was claimed to have been the city of the monkey god, according to legend. Well, this city belonged to a culture that's so mysterious that they don't even know the name of it. It was extensively mapped, and they found plazas, earthworks, mounds, even an earthen pyramid at the site. Now, this is according to their release about this information. The expedition lasted through last Wednesday, also uncovered a collection of stone sculptures and dozens upon dozens of artifacts. They say the find was incredibly rare, especially because it was in perfect condition. It hadn't had the opportunity to be looted. They say that among the more 50 artifacts that they found included ceremonial seats known as metates and carved vessels that had been decorated with snakes, vultures, and other figures. One of the finds was the head of what the archaeologists believe was a weird jaguar sticking out of the ground. Now, it's believed to be depicting a shaman in a transformed spirit-like shape, according to National Geographic. The research team believes that many more artifacts have been buried underground at potential burial sites, and they say that many of the objects they've discovered haven't even been cataloged and certainly not excavated. Now, the lost city was identified during an aerial survey in 2012, and in order to protect the ruins from looters, they're not disclosing the exact location. Well, it's been busy up in the air today, actually up into space, more like it. Two American astronauts have whipped through a third spacewalk outside of the International Space Station today, and on, I guess it was Sunday, I beg your pardon. They rigged parking spots for the new U.S. space taxis. Now, think about that for just a second. Our astronauts took a spacewalk outside of the International Space Station to get ready to make parking spots for the new U.S. space taxis. Now, this is not science fiction, folks. Station Commander Barry Butch Wilmore and Flight Engineer Terry Virts expected to spend about 7 hours installing antennas, cables, and navigation devices on the station's exterior truss. Instead, the astronauts, who were making their third spacewalk in 8 days, were back inside the space station in just a little over 5 hours. The purpose of the outings was to prepare birthing slips for spaceships being developed by Boeing and Space Exploration Technologies, or SpaceX. The astronauts floated outside the Quest airlock shortly after 7 a.m., and they installed more than 400 feet of cables and a whole bunch of other stuff. They say that this will create a $100 billion laboratory, that the space station is a $100 billion laboratory that is now flying about 260 miles above the Earth. A $100 billion laboratory flying above us, and they're now getting it ready to accept parking visitors. Wild.
Wow.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
Well, I suppose you've all heard this on mainstream news. It has been on mainstream news. The volcano Villa Rica in southern Chile has erupted in the early hours this morning, sending a plume of ash and lava high into the sky, and has forced the evacuation of nearby communities. Now, the volcano is located near the popular tourist resort of Pucón. It's about 460 miles south of Santiago, and is one of South America's most active volcanoes. It last erupted in 2000. They say that a column of ash and rock particles shot up 2 miles into the sky over last night. The initial violent eruption was short-lived. Intermittent clouds of steam and gas continued to issue from the volcano. They say that the volcano system remains unstable. They don't know what it's going to do next, but some 3,300 people have been evacuated as a preventative measure. There have been no reports of injuries, which is a good thing.
Mm.
And in Indonesia today, we had another pretty large earthquake, a magnitude 6.4, according to the USGS, in Indonesia. And in Spain, levels of the Ebro River have been high for the last 3 to 4 days. They say that by the 28th of February, it was 6 meters over flood stage and had flooded around 20,000 hectares in northeastern Spain. Well, since then, the river levels have continued to rise and have now flooded more areas along the river, and have flooded, actually, the Spain's fifth largest city. I don't know why I'm tongue-tied tonight, folks. I'm so sorry. I think you all have fun with me. I hope you do. I am just trying to get this out. The more I try, the more it ties up. So anyway, they're having some pretty intense flooding in Spain. And also, in my neck of the woods, they say that there's something in the air around Louisville, Kentucky. They say that something doesn't smell right, and the city officials are trying to find out what it is. Now, complaints in the city started coming in early last week because of a mysterious odor in the metro area, according to the Air Pollution Control District. People are saying, "I smell a musty smell. It smells like a wet dog outside." So people are talking about it, but nobody has any clue what it is. The Air Pollution Control District's been sending people out to investigate the smell of mold and mildew in the air, but they say it's an unusual matter because they're getting so many complaints and they have no idea what's causing the smell. And in Washington State, we've had as much as 1,500 gallons of used motor oil that has leaked from an above-ground storage tank in Washington into a creek that flows into the Yakima River, which, of course, is vital to the agriculture of the state. The cause of the spill on Sunday was from a tank at a former feedlot, and it's under investigation. They say the oil has posed no threat to otters, waterfowl, and fish, and they don't think it's going to hurt the crops in the area. We certainly hope not. Well, we've had an explosion in space. A 20-year-old U.S. Air Force satellite has exploded in space, adding 43 pieces of space junk to Earth's orbit, reports have been claiming. Now, the explosion happened today. They say it happened due to a sudden temperature spike, and although the event has just now come to light, now I don't know what time this story broke, probably early this afternoon. They say that the catastrophic event poses no significant risk to other satellites in Earth orbit, but in fact, they're wondering if it was hit by a meteor, and that is what made it explode. So they say it's really not much of a risk, but that's what's going on up there. We have a lot of space junk. Holy cow. And also, I have brought this story to your attention in earlier broadcasts of Starseed News. In Kazakhstan, we talked about this sleeping sickness disease. I don't know if any of you remember that. Well, there's an update on that. New cases of this inexplicable disorder, they're now calling it Sleepy Hollow disease, have appeared in Kazakhstan, where every 10th villager, including children, have mysteriously fallen asleep in broad daylight, some people unable to wake up for days on end. They're calling it the 9th wave of the disease. They are saying that two people, just yesterday, a man and a woman, fell ill with it, and since the outbreak, 120 people have fallen asleep mysteriously. They say that people are evacuating. They say that the many of the inhabitants of the villages are leaving in this area. They are exiting. They say of 218 families, 124 of them wanted to leave, and so up to 95 people have already bugged out of town. So I can see why. And, you know, they sent in scientists from all over the world to try to find out what was happening, what was causing this, the source of that sleeping disease. So far, there are no reports. Nobody's owning up to it. We don't know. People are just having to leave the area.
Wow.
And in Louisiana, weeks of investigation by federal and state agencies have failed to uncover how a potential bioterror agent escaped from a Louisiana laboratory 4 months ago, or how far it spread. Now, since November, four rhesus monkeys and a USDA investigator have been infected. The cultures of, all right, guys, don't laugh, I'll try, Burkholderia pseudomallei, somehow got out of the secure facility at the Tulane National Primate Research Center in Covington, about 50 miles north of New Orleans, as reported by USA Today. Now, officials are insisting there is no danger to the public. That's what they're insisting. The bacteria causes melioidosis, which is a disease with a 50% fatality rate, even with treatment. And because it's resistant to multiple antibiotics, it's been researched as a potential biological weapon, although the Tulane lab is said to have been working on a vaccine. On February 26th, UFOs were recorded on video and camera in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Lewisburg, Mississippi, and that has been all over the internet, and there are some wonderful videos. I'm only mentioning it to you because obviously I can't show you a video when I'm talking to you, but I wanted to give you a few quotes. The people that had seen it, and by the way, if you're in that area, did you see it? Did you see anything like it? You need to email me at anastasia@starseedhotline.com. I want to know. But the witnesses are saying it was a bright, blinding light, that it was triangular in shape and at least the size of a football field. Witnesses say that it reported silently for about 20 minutes, hovering over a field before shooting straight up into the sky. Did you see it? Did you live in that? Do you live in that area? Let me know. And this week's quote, this requires some real pondering. Yesterday is history. Tomorrow is mystery. Today is a gift. That's why we call it the present.
Oh, I love that.
Isn't that great?
That's great.
If you really let that sink in, that's just something to savor. Great wisdom there. Well, that's it for Starseed News tonight. Thank you for forbearing with me. I enjoy bringing it to you every week. I'm so looking forward to the news. And my message to you, Starseed listeners, from my heart to yours, peace be with you. Have a blessed week. I send you love. Thank you, Ariel.
And thank you, Anastasia, for the Starseed News. And I'm going to bring Lavendar on right away here and get our special guest on as well. Let me get your microphone open. Hello, Carl. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Lavendar.
We are so happy to have you. And Lavendar?
I'm here.
Okay. All right.
Okay, Carl. Oh, I'm so glad that you agreed to be our guest tonight. And I've been reading on your book, The Global Mind and the Rise of Civilization, and bravo, bravo, bravo. I mean, it really took a lot of time to write this and research it, but it's really given me something to ponder. So welcome to our show.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I'd like to know, how and when did you become interested in the Mayan calendar?
Well, that happened in 1979, which is now, 35 years ago or something like that. I simply went on a backpacking trip to Guatemala and Mexico. And when I came there, it was a life-changing experience. Not any particular thing that happened or so, but the feeling of attraction that I had to the Mayan people and to the Mexican people and the indigenous peoples of Mexico in general just gave me very profoundly a sense of this is the purpose of my life and this is where I should focus my efforts and so forth. In reality, I think this is sort of a mission, you might say, that I was born with. But that particular trip, when I was 29 years old, that's what activated my mission and made me aware of it. And ever since, the Mayan calendar and the Mayan people has been with me, even though encounter with the Maya, it took me another 14 or 15 years until I left my previous career in the harm sciences and went into trying to make sense of their calendar system, which points to a very different way of looking on time compared to what we're used to in our own culture.
So how did your work with the hard sciences prepare you for your present work?
Well, I think it prepared me immensely because it was very hard school to begin with, and evaluating evidence and I should say, the very fact that of working in the experimental sciences, it also tells you not only that you have to use your intuition to understand the phenomena and formulate patterns and so forth, but very often you're actually directly confronted with the limits of your intuition. It happens that you things do not always turn out the way as any scientist can tell you. The experiments do not always turn out exactly the way that they have intuited, and sometimes you'd have to go to another step and so forth. And I think that's a very very valuable experience to have had, a humbling kind of experience that yes, you should use your intuition, but unless you have verified what your intuition tells you, you can never be sure that you're on track. And that's still the basic premise I'm operating from.
I know that you've really gone extensively with mapping out the brain and the mind, but I would like to focus now a little bit on what you discovered when you started investigating the Great Pyramid of Giza and how it was built as a reflection of the global mind. Can you give us some information about that?
Well, the Great Pyramid of Giza is it's the crowning of the Egyptians' pyramid building, if nothing else, and it remains the most astounding pyramid of our planet, I think. And one of the things that I look at here is the fact that the Great Pyramid of Giza is eight-sided. And this is not my discovery. It's been known for quite some time, but it hasn't been highlighted. Or if it has been highlighted, it's been a mystery because it's actually much more difficult to build a pyramid which is a little bit indented, you know, so it's not just a straight square, but a little bit indented. You see it very well from satellite pictures. And this eight-sidedness or eight-directedness is something that corroborates the very explanation to what the Maya talked about as the beginning of what they called the long count calendar, which is a calendar that started in 3115 BC. In other words, it starts when people in several different places of our planet started to build pyramids. And so the very geometry of the pyramids, since they started to be built at the time when the Maya long count began, points to the possibility that what actually happened was a shift in the geometry of the mind, the geometry of the global mind, and it's about as an enormous shift in consciousness. We don't really have any sharp lines, straight lines, before the beginning of the long count and before the Egyptians built the Giza pyramids. But once that happened, once what I talk about as a downloading of a structured linear mind, literally linear, because people then started to produce lines and perpendicular lines. Once that happened, that's a remarkable thing, not only in Egypt, but you find in Peru, in Mongolia, in Sumeria, and several other places from exactly the same time, this beginning of straight lines. A mind appeared that was structured, and the Giza pyramid has this alignment with the North Pole that is just absolutely astounding, that, you know, probably modern technology could not reproduce it. But I would say that when this new mind, this eight-sided straight lines was downloaded and gave people a structure from which to the world and so forth, when that happened, people were fantastic in manifesting a new geometry on the planet that had never existed before.
So what makes the Mayan calendar so unique and different from all the other calendars?
Well, you know, we're used to almost all other calendars are based on astronomical phenomena. And the Mayan calendar is not. And I don't know of any other, you know, you find hints of in ancient times of a similar way of looking at time. But I don't really know of any, certainly not any calendar that exists today, like the Mayan, which is not based on the Earth's revolution around the sun or of the moon's revolution around the Earth. In other words, it's a purely, I would say, a purely metaphysical calendar. It's a calendar of creation, and that creation is ultimately comes from the divine source, and it's that makes it very different. It's not based or even correlated immediately to the physical reality. It's a metaphysical calendar, describes shifting polarity of consciousness, I would say.
So how is your work related to the hype that was surrounding that Mayan calendar back in 2012?
Well, in many different, I should say, there was a tremendous focus in those days on that shift that would happen on one particular date. Most people thought it was December 21, 2012. The point is really not that that date might have been false, but the thing is that the Mayan calendar is not like predicting things, enormous changes that would happen in one singular day. We're talking about, you know, when we're talking about the so-called long count that started 5,100 years ago when the pyramids began to be built, we're talking about waves of peaks and valleys alternating, changing the human mind, the global mind that we're all in resonance with. And those waves, these peaks, these valleys, they last for about 400 years. And there are several other waves involved that the Mayan calendar describes. But that fact, there was a tremendous shift that happened on a very large scale in those years, 2011, 2012. But it's not something that happens in a day. It's something that we will see manifesting over decades and even centuries. It's a much longer, much larger perspective that you need to have when you are looking at reality from the perspective of the Mayan calendar.
You know, I noticed in the book that you talked about a date in October. Was it 2011 that you had a personal experience with the shift? Can you tell us a little bit about what you experienced at that time?
Well, I just came to conclude that that the waves would not end. They are just continuing, and the Mayan calendar that describes these waves of creation that ultimately work through changing the human mind, that doesn't stop. These waves are continuing. It wasn't an end to the waves, and not really a new beginning either. It's actually more like ongoing waves of creation that continue to change the global mind that we're all part of, that we're all in resonance with, I should say.
So what theories are there regarding what caused the rise of civilization on our planet?
Well, I mean, if you go to the mainstream archaeology and mainstream history, they basically do not deal with this question. They see it mostly as their task to describe what happened and so forth, and they have dug in many parts of the world, and they have created a reasonable timeline as to when civilization first emerged on our planet, but they really do not try to explain it. And yet, you know, if you go to the findings of the archaeologists and historians, they find that almost all the phenomena that we associate with the rise of civilization, that they do appear for the first time very close to this time when the Mayan long count began. In other words, about 5,000 years ago, because that's the time when we have the first cities, the first pyramids, the first writing, the first numbers, the first calendars, the first wheels, etc., etc., etc. And everybody agrees that it was a sort of an explosion of innovations happening at that exact point in time, but they do not make the connection, I would say, to see that this actually coincides with the Mayan calendar beginning of the long count and the kind of explanation to what the Maya talked about then as a metaphysical change that affected the entire planet. So that's the mainstream way of looking at this, really not giving any explanation. because if you are a professional historian working in at a university or something like that, you're basically not allowed to imply that there might be spiritual forces, that there might be a divine source of and so forth. That is considered not appropriate in academic circles. So they don't deal with the issue. There are two other theories that have become in the wake of this, because the mainstream doesn't provide any explanations. There are two other ideas, basic ideas, I would say. One is the widespread idea that's on History Channel, that extraterrestrials came here and told everybody how to build a civilization or something like that. And then there is also the idea that long in the past, there was this kind of an original civilization, like an Atlantis or something like that, which collapsed, and then the present civilization would somehow be inheriting knowledge from that. But my own view then is a completely new theory. It's never been presented before. That is that what happened and what caused the rise of civilization was that there was a shift in consciousness according to a divine time plan. It's not just people, their minds, or actually download their minds for no reason. No, it is part of this Mayan calendar, a description of how the divine changes consciousness over long periods of time. And what happened 5,000 years ago when the first civilizations would emerge on the planet was simply that people downloaded a structured mind. And with that, equipped with that mind, they started to create all these phenomena that we associate with civilization.
So as I was reading your book, I noticed that you had several pages devoted to the pineal. So when did the humans first gain a mind, and can you expand on what the pineal does?
Well, you know, it's the pineal then... has been by Descartes, and it was called the seat of the soul. And certainly in India and in Eastern traditions, that is associated with the third eye. And there is the idea and the experience of some people that when there is an opening to the pineal gland or of this third eye, then people become enlightened. And to me, in the mind is somewhat of an opposite to enlightenment. I'm using the concept of the mind pretty much in the Indian way of looking at it, and I think I need to clarify that. In the West, the common view is that people think that the mind is a very good thing, because after all, the mind is what has helped us create all the technology and so forth and the civilization. That's really what I'm talking about in my book, how the mind has created that. But if you go to India, the view is sometimes, at least, it's the very opposite. The mind is looked upon as something that blocks the enlightenment of people. And I would say that both of those views are true. And that's what happens when people get enlightened and when the third eye opens up. It's actually that the mind, at least people are applying techniques that deactivates the mind or decouples the human being from this global mind that has created civilization. So I believe that the pineal gland is sort of the anchoring point for the mind. And to me, the mind is really a geometric structure. It's geometric structure of straight and perpendicular lines that we're not always aware of. But when we're looking through reality at this, when we're looking at reality through this particular structured mind, we also start to understand it logically, and then we also become able to recreate the kind of structure that the mind has given us in our societies, in our relationships, in how we look upon the world, and so forth. The pineal gland, I think, is a central point for the spiritual growth of people, for the very reason that it is an inner eye, and the reason that techniques that are applied to sort of decouple the mind leads to enlightenment is the fact that it's that the mind, these techniques help to free the pineal gland or the third eye from the mind.
Well, how can we know for certain that the mind is something that we download and is not created by the brain?
Well, we can see that, one of the things that I'm pointing to so many things in the book is that synchronicities that happen all over the planet, which point to the idea that, which this book is all about, that, our individual minds are really reflections of downloading of a global mind. Each one of us is in resonance with a global mind. Now, how would we know that? Well, one of the examples, one of the reasons I think we can know that is what I already mentioned or touched upon earlier, namely that when this Mayan long count began 5,130 years ago, we find that very similar phenomena associated with a structured mind, in other words, with civilization, appear in Peru, in Mongolia, in Egypt, and several other places in what we now call the Middle East. These people, they did not. It's not like the Sumerians borrowed the Egyptian hieroglyphs, or that the or vice versa. We know for certain that this writing, which is a very significant aspect of civilization, appeared independently at this particular time in several other places. So why would this happen at the same time if it were not for the fact that it was a shift in a mind that is actually global, that people everywhere on our planet are in resonance with and using for their thought process? And I think, I'm sure that many of the listeners to this program have experienced an immense amount of phenomena that's called the synchronicities, the amazing connections that somebody you think about somebody and that person will call you at the time you think of him or you know, you run into somebody else, your next door neighbor, you run into in another country, or all these kind of things. Now, how would this be if it were not for the fact that all of our minds somehow were connected? And what is presented in this book is a reasonable and a logical theory how our minds are connected. But not only how our minds are connected, but also how the evolution of all of our minds are connected. In other words, very often we see phenomena spreading all over the world at the same time. You know, I'm thinking about, for instance, the fifth year, 2011. People forget very easily, but, you know, in the year 2011, the whole world, everywhere, people were protesting against things, against the dictators, against bankers, and the people were, it was the time of the Arab Spring and the kind of hope that was associated with it, and the Occupy movement and so forth. And, you know, I'm not going to go into how this has later developed, but the point to make is that what happens sometimes is that suddenly people in so many different parts of the world are somehow thinking along new lines when there are shifts and when there are activations of new waves of evolution like the Mayan calendar describes. We very often, you know, we have this concept of that there is an idea whose time has come. And when the time has come for an idea, we find that many people will adapt it and it will spread widely and so forth. And why would that be? The shift in the global mind. And as that happens, then many people will be in resonance with that particular shift. And then whatever new ideas that the shift brings an opening for will tend to spread and be adopted by a large number of people, whether the things are good or bad or whatever we think about it. We can certainly see that over history, the processes of historical events are correlated and connected all over the world, even though they're not necessarily in contact with another. People are influenced by the same kind of shifts in consciousness all over the planet.
So how may the study of your book contribute to the healing of humanity?
Well, that goes into add one more level of complexity, and this will be dealt with much more in the following two volumes of this trilogy that I call the Paradigm Shift Trilogy. Because the Mayan calendar is, you know, I hear the first book and our discussion here has essentially dealt with what is called the long count, which is one particular wave that was activated in 3115 BC. That's the wave that has changed the mind of people, that has allowed human beings to download a rational mind, and that is what is behind the creation of civilization and so forth. Now, that is, you know, that's only the good side of this particular wave. That wave is also the wave of duality. It's a wave that certainly has created all kinds of separation between human beings. The mind that people started to download 5,000 years ago but also a mind of like the yin yang polarity of the light darkness, and it's created. It's not only at the source of all the good things we associated with civilization. It's also at the source of all the conflict, of all the injustices, the warfare and so forth. Because the duality, people downloaded a mind that led them to look upon the world through a dualist filter. And as they did, you know, we have seen all the kind of aspects, the oppression, suppression of the feminine, war come along with civilization as it's been developing for the past 5,000 years. That's because this structured mind also is a dualist mind. Now, that is, however, only one of nine different waves that is creating this universe, according to the Mayan cosmology. And what is really sort of the hope of our current time is that in October of 2011, there was activated the ninth and the highest wave in this calendrical system. The Maya would, in their cities, they would very often at the center of the plazas, they would build a pyramid that is built in nine terraces, in nine stories. And these are nine ways, nine different filters to look at reality through. And at the current time, all of these, after 2011, when the ninth and the highest wave was activated, all of those waves exist at the same time. They're influencing us. And because they all nine levels are now, after 2011, possible for us to resonate with, we have, in a sense, entered a kind of a multi-dimensional reality that did not exist before. That happened in 2011. It's that the ninth wave, the highest wave, the sort of where all of creation have been climbing towards. That's what the Mayan kings would be enacted when they climbed the pyramid. They enacted the creation, climbing up the higher and higher levels of consciousness. And the ninth wave is the one that, again, allows us to truly look upon reality through an unfiltered way, in a new mind that has become a possibility, that doesn't come with a kind of dualist framework that lower waves have done. So we now have a possibility that after 2011, we now have a possibility that has never existed before to recreate a world based on this new unity consciousness. People would say, well, that doesn't seem to fit the world. We are seeing a massive increase of conflict and so forth, if you look at the world, especially in the past year. Now, yes, because it's the choice, the downloading of these different kinds of levels, these different levels of consciousness, it will always come from our intention. And all the waves continue to run in parallel, and nobody can be forced to be in resonance with this unity consciousness that was available in 2011. But I'm confident that not only will this be over time become the strongest influence, but that we now have the chance to actually go into a kind of a unity where we truly experience that everything is connected, all human beings are connected, we're all connected with all the animals, with the earth, with all the cosmos and so forth. Not like, you know, not like a theoretical idea or something like that. This is something that we're going into as we develop our direct contact with the divine, and this new ninth wave allows us to create a new relationship with our personal divine that will that I do believe is the crucial factor for the healing of humanity. But that's not possible, and the Mayan calendar explains what is happening in the world and what has happened in the past, and it can outline the possibilities that we will have into the future.
You know, one of the things that I have noticed about 2011 and 2012 was that the consciousness of the people was rising. People were getting information and taking it to the next step. They were able to kind of play chess in their mind going into the future. You'd say something to someone and they would be two or three steps ahead of you already. It's like the brain power that we've had, I think, got amped up. You know, it's like they say we have 10% of our brains that we use, but for some reason, I think it went to 15% during 2011 and 2012. Do you feel that that happened also?
I would say mind power rather than brain power, just to. because the brains have always been active, but the mind hasn't been used. And it's only that, you know, after this shift that we will be able to be in resonance with an unlimited, unrestricted mind. And so maybe the power of a mind has, for those people that are going into this particular wave, that the power of our mind may have increased, as you suggest, between 10 and 15%. Yes.
I do. Well, I noticed the time, and I know that you have a commitment here within the next 5 minutes. So I'm going to turn it over now to Ariel and tell the listeners how to get his book. And by the way, when are you going to release the other two books? Are they in the works right now?
They are in the works. And it's also a shift in the publisher, because in the tradition will take over and come with a new edition of the first volume. So I suspect they will publish the whole trilogy. The other ones are they are in the works, but I don't expect them to be available until 2016.
Okay. Well, when they are, you need to come back and be a guest on our show. I've really enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you.
But I do respect that you have another commitment, so yes. I will hand you over to Ariel at this time. Thank you, Carl.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you for the interview.
And I would just like to reiterate that Carl's website is Kalleman.com, and that's Kalleman.com, where you can find his book and more information about the work that you're doing. And I do wish that you will come back, because we have so much more to talk about that we just don't have time tonight. And because of your schedule, we won't have time for any questions. So is there a contact information on your website? If people
yes, there is. And there's an envelope that points to people that want to send an email to me.
Okay. Well, so because we did have a couple of callers with questions, so you can just go to Carl's website, Kalleman.com, Kalleman.com. And send him an email if you have a question that you would like to discuss. So thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to having you on the show again in the future.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it very much.
You are so welcome, Carl. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to thank everyone for listening this evening. We will be back next week. And if you do have an interest in our Crystal Quest, please let me know, because we do have just a handful of spots still available. So if you don't know if you have those markings, send an email to crystals@starseedhotline.com, and I will check your charts for those required markings. So until next week, everyone, take care, stay warm, and thank you so much for listening. Good night, everyone.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.